pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday morning. Text line, be in touch with the show, 251-343-0106. That's how you get in touch with the show. Just hit us up there. Coming up on the program this morning, we're kicking off with Austin Sidwell. He's a candidate in the 1st Congressional District for the Republican nomination. We had Jerry Carl yesterday. We got Austin today, so you want to make sure you stick around for that. Also, Joey Clark, we do this every Wednesday with Joey from News and Views on News Talk 93.1 in Montgomery, Alabama. Joey will be with us. Also, writes a column for us at 1819 News, 1819news.com. And then in the 11 o'clock hour from Breitbart News, my colleague there, Bradley J, will be with us. And it's pretty much all Iran now. We went from all Grand Platner to all Iran. I guess Trump met with Zelensky today. Let's check on the price of oil. $74 a barrel for West Texas Intermediate. Brent up to $78. So that's an increase of 5%. Watching that. Fill up your car while you can, I guess. Since sounds like we're getting back in the middle of this. I said this yesterday. Will this hold? Will this hold through November? And there was a lot of skepticism from my standpoint. But oil not going up quite as much as I would have thought. We're just going to do this yo-yo thing. You'll see the Dow's down a percentage point, so down 490 points. NASDAQ down 0.3%. So not having the hit to the market, a lot of this might be just priced in. It might just already kind of be expected that this is where this is going. The market tends to trade, and they trade into the future, and they look at this memorandum of understanding, and they think, well, you know, this seems very fragile. This seems very, potentially that this could go south at any moment. And, that's why it's not having quite the impact on the markets yet. We'll see how it goes. Trump's promising some more strikes, another blockade. Then here in probably a month, they will come back crawling to Trump and they'll do another memorandum of understanding. I guess we're just going to do this forever. I don't think this is the direction you want to go politically. I'm telling you, our politics is going to be pegged to the price of oil. Republicans are going to, this is the strange situation Democrats are in. They need tensions inflamed in the Middle East to do well. They need conflict between Iran and the United States to do well, I believe. So imagine being in that situation where you have to cheer on the war. And I just, at this rate, guys, I mean, what's the path to getting this to stop? All you foreign policy experts who think this is just a necessary thing we do to strike an enemy, to neutralize them, what is the logical path of resolving this? Or is this just going to be the new normal? We're going to have stop and go through the Strait of Hormuz. We've had to deal with this before. I was listening to Admiral Kit Davis talk about this. I remember when I was a child watching it on the news in the 1980s. and Iran hitting or threatening ships in the strait there, and Reagan having to deal with it. How many more missile batteries do these guys have? How do you, now I know you're never going to stop them with their drones, but essentially what happens, you have this dust up, and then Iran takes its aggression out on its neighbors, and you see Kuwait and other places getting the brunt of the reaction. Is there ever going to be a peaceful solution here? Are they just going to have to buy off the Iranians? That's what Obama did. Wouldn't acknowledge it. But, you know, this was the Bush thing. You don't negotiate with terrorists. And these guys are terrorists. So as the price of oil goes up, gas prices will probably go up even more, guys, because this is what happens. They take a while to come down, and then they go up in a hurry. Any excuse there? And I know I'm going to get a bunch of text about that. By the way, 251-343-0106, if you want to interact with the program. But we're going to hear a lot about that. And it's really up to Trump to try to figure out a way, if you're going to do this, to cushion this blow to the consumer. Some of you may say, well, the blow to the consumer is worth it, but that's not going to be a majority view. And people aren't really even watching the news or thinking about it, but they are thinking about it when they have to go fill up the gas tank. Everybody needs gas. It's going to have an impact. So I just that's my warning. That's my thought on it. Is this really what people want? Not that they don't want a safe Middle East and a protected Israel and no threat to the mainland of the United States. If you really believe that there's a nuclear weapon coming to the United States. Well, what they want is their day-to-day lives not to be interrupted. It's not hard. It's not difficult. But that's the key here. I know they war game all this, and they know what is going to happen. But what they underestimate is they're going to do this in the middle of an election cycle, and it's going to create a hardship. Then there's going to be consequences. Anyway, 251-343-0106. The other story still out there kind of kicking around is Graham Platt. There, will he or won't he step aside? I've heard he stepped aside. I heard that was misreported. Why would you, if you're Graham Platt, step aside? Why would you? So the other way this would happen is that the main Democratic Party said, all right, well, we're just going to strip you of the nomination and put someone else in, which is a real possibility. We've seen it in Alabama. Either way, the seat is lost. Graham Platner is not going to be a senator, but he's probably still their best shot, I think, at winning that seat. But this is bare-knuckle, hardball politics. And the moment it started looking like he was going to be the nominee is when the Susan Collins machine got into action. I mean, she may be a moderate, but she knows how to win Senate elections. She wins them every time. We do this every 6 years with Susan Collins. This might be the year. Maine could go Democrat. And somehow or another, moderate old Republican Susan Collins pulls it off. She takes a hard vote on like Kavanaugh or something like that. And next thing you know, she's winning again. So she won her first Senate election in 1996, guys. She's got a good 30-year run here. This will be her fifth term. She's got to win this race. Democrats aren't going to be able to get out of the way of themselves on this one, I'm afraid. But why, if you're Graham Platner, would you step aside? This is sort of the dynamic of the Democratic Party. Because if they do this, what's the calculation here? Because there are still some true believers out there regarding Graham Platner. Who's it? Marjorie Taylor Greene on The View. Said she this looks like a political hit job. Democrats saw some polling. They know it's not winnable, and now they're trying to salvage this. And this is, they can't win this seat, then the odds of them winning the United States Senate back and putting it in Democrat hands are very, very, very uphill. They got to pick off another seat somewhere. Where are they going to do that? You're going to have Barry Moore lose? No. There's just not that many winnable seats. And they got a higher threshold to cross because J.D. Vance is the tiebreaker. It's kind of similar to what the Democrats had when Joe Biden was elected. And then you had the two Georgia Senate seats up for grabs. And then Raphael Warnock and Kelly Loeffler who he faced. And then John Ossoff beating David Perdue. In that, it was like right after the January 6th fiasco. And you felt like Republicans should still give it their best shot. They left it up to Mitch McConnell, and they sent a bunch of McConnell people who were trying to throw the race, it felt like, in Georgia. And then they had the tiebreaker with Kamala Harris, and then that's all she wrote. If you just won one Senate seat, if Doug Collins doesn't get in that Senate race in 2020, Kelly Loeffler wins, and you salvage a lot of the inflation. So these elections can't have consequences in the long run. They don't pass the ARPA bill. The ARPA bill is probably the main reason you had the hyperinflation going throughout Biden in the early part of Trump. Some of it was Trump. I'm not absolving Trump. But the CARES Act and the ARPA funding, all in the name of COVID, that would have never passed with a Republican held Senate. That would have never made it to. They would have passed something, and it might have been some inflation, but it wouldn't have been to that level. 251-343-0106. But we're in Graham Platner mode and we're in Iran mode. And I think the Iran stuff is really more of an immediate thing. The way this works, guys, like in a week, we could be talking about another memorandum of understanding with J.D. Vance and Witkoff and Jared Kushner and whoever, and meeting with the latest round of Iranian officials in Zurich or somewhere, Geneva. 251-343-0106. We'll get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for hanging out with us on this Wednesday morning. Text line 251-343-0106. You want to be in touch with the program, hit us up there. Coming up in the next segment, Austin Sidwell will make time for us, so please make sure that you stay tuned for that. First Texas Squirrel Verine, was Andrew Gillum heading to Daphne for the birthday celebration, hoping to get a slice of the cake? That's something the city of Daphne to add to the 99th birthday celebration. Don't let the incident fade away. Andrew Gillum, man, you don't really appreciate the whole Andrew Gillum thing unless you had to live under his leadership. They had their first direct hit from a hurricane since the early 80s when we were there. My wife is in law school at Florida State. So this would be 2017, maybe earlier, maybe 16, somewhere in that realm. Yeah, I guess it was the fall of 16. And the way Tallahassee is, the African-American population is kind of south of town. North of town, it's the university, Florida State University-ish. You go on further north, and it's the older parts. And then the suburbs. And when the power went out, the city handles the utility. And there was there was a fight over people coming in from other places that were non-union to help with the recovery. They were trying to stop them. And then where they decided they were going to put the best resources was in the places that voted overwhelmingly for Andrew Gillum. I mean, it was just a mess, and it went on for weeks. I think some people didn't get their power back on for almost a month. And, I mean, just clearly just a problem. So that was when that happened, and he decided he was going to run for governor. And then all during this time, there were these allegations swirling about him, and they had tried to do some park upgrades, and they built this restaurant in the middle of the park. There were just some discussions about cronyism, and the feds were looking around, and the Tallahassee Democrat was doing stories, and no one really knew what was going on, but they knew something was going on, and nothing ever happened. It was just an abject failure under his leadership. And I thought, man, if this guy is governor, and this was a Democrat cycle, 2018, when he ran, it would have been a disaster. And thankfully, Ron DeSantis pulled it off. Not by much, but he pulled it off. Jason tells me that my boy Sidwell will be on 106.5 at 9:30. I think you meant to send that to someone else, Jason. Good morning, Jeff. Why can't we get rid ourselves of incapacitated fossils like McConnell and what's really going on there? They're just trying to hold on. I mean, it's a voted U.S. Senate. Is he even aware? Is it a KIV situation? I don't know. They tend to, the people around surrounding these kind of people who may be checked out, are very insular. They keep it very, very on the down low. We'll see what Thune has to say. There's not a whole lot coming out of Thune's office on this. Well, ask Bradley that. I mean, he's up on the Hill a lot. Gas prices will go up. Iran continues to harass and interfere with shipping in the Strait of Hormuz. The current regime has an ideological hatred for America. Unfortunately, must eradicate the persons with this ideological hatred and stop negotiating with terrorists, please. But, the ideology, is it an ideological hatred? Maybe. I am telling you, my gut tells me that this is domestic politics. Some of it is definitely hate America, hate Israel. But some of it, I think, is this is how they keep handle on power domestically. I mean, this regime's got to be pretty fragile. And if you have a common enemy, then you can get people all on your side and you take some of that uprising out of the equation. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Paul Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Cowboys are I gave you my heart and I
to the Jeff Horst Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday morning. Text line still can get in, 251-343-0106. We can pick up your text next couple of segments, so keep them coming. Joey Clark coming up in the 10 o'clock hour from News Talk 93.1 in Montgomery, and my colleague at Breitbart News, Bradley J., will make time for us in the 11 o'clock hour, so please stay tuned for that. Joining us now, he's a candidate in the 1st Congressional District for the Republican nomination special election on August 11th, but Austin Sidwell joins us on the line. Austin, good morning. How are
you? Hey, Jeff. How you? I'm doing good, man. How are you doing?
Doing well. Doing well. Thanks for making time for us. We appreciate it. Well, let's start here. How's the campaign going?
Oh, it's going well. You know, we're in the final stretch. We're getting out there letting people know that there's still a special primary on August 11th. And that's the biggest thing. With all the confusion, all the changes to this race, you know, having a primary, then a runoff, and then a new special election, the primary goal is just to educate voters and get them out to vote.
Yeah, and in these low turnout events, I mean, it becomes, I mean, I don't know, I haven't seen any polls or anything like that, but these low turnout events, those percentages are less relevant. It's just raw vote. So it's just get out the vote, I would think.
That's exactly right. I mean, we're expecting, if you go based off of a runoff, anywhere from 7 to 10% would be great. That means that we can go out and actually, you know, get in front of every single voter that we need to win this race. So it really gives a grassroots campaign like mine an opportunity to make a difference. So I urge anyone out there who doubts whether or not, you know, we can take on the big guys to get out there and vote, because your vote's going to matter, you know, 3-4x in this race.
Well, let's, you know, and let's talk about, let's do this. Some of our listeners might not be familiar with you, but just talk a little bit about yourself before we proceed.
Yeah, absolutely. I grew up here in Baldwin County. I went to Foley High School, went to the United States Air Force Academy after that, spent 12 years flying helicopters in the Air Force to include combat search and rescue, and then 6 years at Fort Rucker as an instructor. In my time in the Air Force, I got an MBA. I actually started law school while I was active duty, just graduated from Jones School of Law up in Montgomery back in December. After I left the Air Force in 23, I came to run my family's security company here locally. Been doing that for the last 3 years.
And now you've decided to take the daunting leap into politics. What has led you to that decision?
Well, first of all, I think this is where God wants me to be. Second of all, you know, you take a look at the state of the world right now, the state of our politics, and I've got 3 kids, a 15-year-old, an 8-year-old, and a 4-year-old. And there's no guarantee that America is going to survive, turbulent times unless good people stand up and, stand on those true conservative values. And I didn't see that out of our representatives, candidates in this election. And you know, when you see a problem, then if you don't stand up and raise your hand and take on that problem, then what are you doing? So that's what I decided to do. I think we need a voice of the people as a representative in our Congress, and that's what I'm here to do.
And we'll get into some current topics here, but you're elected to Congress. What is your what are you going to try to make a priority?
Well, I think we have to make a priority Social Security. You saw a couple of weeks ago, by 2032, the largest Social Security fund is going to be insolvent. And I think that that's a huge deal. You know, we keep seeing the federal government, you know, throw money at that problem, print more money and throw it at it. And it's at a point now where it's not going to continue unless we fundamentally change how we look at Social Security. And people see it as an entitlement, but, you know, you and I pay into it every day. My dad's been paying into it his entire career, both as a small business owner and, you know, out of his own paycheck. And he's not going to see that money for retirement. We're not going to see that money for retirement if we don't look at the system and figure out how to keep Congress's hands out of that pot of money.
Yeah, well, you know, one would think they'd probably just inflate their way out of it or something like that. But that's going to have an impact on the overall economy. I mean, whatever the solution may be, it's unsustainable.
It's unsustainable as it is. And you've seen some decent ideas across the years, but no one's been willing to budge on it because it's not a politically sexy thing to do. Right. You don't hear politicians talk about Social Security because, you know, it's it's difficult. It's difficult to get out there and say, you know, we're going to protect the interests of the people that are currently under the program while also recreating something that's sustainable for the future. It's going to be difficult, but we've got to have people up there willing to talk about it.
Well, it's just this, though, that, you know, every time someone tries to do, I mean, you get grandma getting pushed off a cliff in a wheelchair, or you get this just like high speed, very aggressive demagoguery about, you know, Republicans one that, or whoever it may be, if a Democrat were to come along and say they want to take your Social Security away and give it to rich people or something. It's just, that's what always makes it tough, because it's just too easy to get to people's fears.
It is, but I mean, look at the current proposals for fixes. They're either going to raise the age or they're going to increase the payroll tax. Being a small business guy myself, you know, with inflation and everything else that's gone on in the economy, it's hard enough to find people to work right now. And, you know, adding a percentage or a percentage and a half to the payroll tax is going to crush small businesses. We can't do that. And what are we going to do? Increase the age to 75? 76. I mean, at some point, it just doesn't make any sense. We're not giving people what we promised them. So we're going to have to fundamentally look at how we do it. One of the things that I've worked on is a piece of legislature that captures some of the revenue off of the data that these tech companies are pulling from us, and essentially taxes that directly for Social Security. There's money out there to put back into the fund and to fund it appropriately and turn it into a 401k based system where it's tied to you and the government can't pull from it when it needs money.
Joined by Alston Sidwell, he's a candidate in the 1st Congressional District for the Republican nomination. The election on August 11th. Austin, let's talk about what's going on in the world. I guess the top of the list now, Iran, the memorandum of understanding sort of collapsing. I kind of feel like, I mean, it was inevitable. I mean, I just, dealing with this right now is you have a bad actor. You just have somebody who's just not a trustworthy actor. But on the other hand, you got to figure something out to get Strait of Hormuz open, or we're going to feel the crunch domestically.
Yeah, and I think we talked about this the last time that you and I spoke on here. I mean, okay, would I have gone into there? No, but I support the president's decision to take out a regime like that in Iran. But what's the plan? I think I said this before. If we didn't have a solution by July 4th, what were we going to do? Well, that's come and gone. So I, what are we getting out of it? Whether it's, you know, the global economic interest of controlling the Strait of Hormuz, we didn't get that. Doesn't look like that's viably on the table. But how long are we going to stay over there and bomb these people and get nothing in return? So that's all. I just want to know, you know, what's the plan going forward? If they give us an end game that makes sense, okay, cool. But I'm tired of sending, you know, our men and women over there to fight in these wars that don't benefit America. While we're sitting over here, you know, the highest affordability costs we've ever seen in America. You've got job numbers that are looking worse and worse every single quarter. And the economy is getting more and more sluggish here. We're moving towards a recession while we're focused elsewhere. It's time to focus back on America, you know, the essence of that America First movement. And we need to do it before the primaries, or we're going to lose the House and the Senate.
The
midterms.
Right, because that's what I was going to say. I mean, people may not be, like, very tuned in. I mean, unfortunately, it's just the reality of our society in America that they're not watching the news blow by blow. But they're going to know when they go to fill up at the gas tank and they're paying in excess of $5 a gallon for, you know, regular unleaded, that this is not going like we had hoped. And there's going to be repercussions, and the repercussions are going to be you're going to get a Democrat majority and maybe the House and the Senate.
And unlike the Republicans, when the Democrats get the majority, they move the country to the left. You know, I've said this throughout my campaign. When we have the majority, we don't do anything. And we haven't really done much congressionally throughout President Trump's second term. And what's going to happen when American people see a stagnant government, they choose the other side. So we have got to get working before the midterms and to create some momentum. And I think the first step of that is to get us out of Iran.
Yeah, what does success look like? That's never been quite clear to me because, okay, we have an objective we're trying to achieve. What is that objective? And it went from taking the nuclear option off the table, but now it's shifted. And this is what's problematic. it's allowing shipping traffic through, you know, the Strait of Hormuz. How do you, you know, like, how are you going to pull that off, especially now with drone technology and whatever armaments Iran has left? Can you wipe that out? And that doesn't appear to be the case.
Yeah. And I mean, what's the economic repercussions of, you know, truly going after their infrastructure? I mean, we can do it. We can cripple them. But the problem with that is then we have a Strait of Hormuz that's not actually producing anything. So it may be open, but it's not going to produce anything. So it's kind of, yeah, I'm with you. What's the end goal here? If we want to control the Strait of Hormuz, we've got the GCC allied right now. Put the GCC with Israel there and let them handle the Strait. But it didn't seem like that was the goal. So, I'm with you. Show us what the end game is and let us get there. And let's get there fast.
This is from a texter here. We talked about this with one of your opponents, Jerry Carl, yesterday. The problems with the labor market and workforce participation and figuring out ways. I mean, you know, the big business seems to be relying on a lot of, you know, migrant labor, be it legal or illegal. But the question here, I would be extremely curious what Austin's opinion of the current labor market is and getting, I guess the main thrust of the question is getting people off the couch into work.
I mean, we're still coming off the heels of COVID, unfortunately. You would think that this far, you know, away from it, that the government would learn their lesson and stop paying people to sit at home. But that's not just the federal government. It's state governments across the country. We're still, I mean, the welfare system is so full of fraud. It's so full of government bureaucracy. I mean, it moves at the pace of a snail. So we're sitting here and we're watching these governmental processes go on that just don't actually facilitate getting people off of welfare and getting them back into the seats of all these open jobs.
Yeah.
And so I think DOGE was a big plus towards that. Let's figure out the fraud, waste, and abuse in these welfare systems first. Let's get the people who don't deserve it off, and then we can figure out how to restructure those programs to keep them from getting back on in the future.
Well, there's also like just sort of we have a social safety net, and it's being abused in society. And do you ever talk to people? There's like these economic development experts or whatever you want to call them. There's two impediments here. And impediment number one is people who are able-bodied adults can't pass a drug test. How do you rectify that? Then the second problem you hear is, well, we have a deficiency in childcare that you can't go to work because you don't have anywhere for your children to go while you're at work. So there's like these barriers to entry and figuring those out. Now, I mean, is it just have a government program for this? I don't know, but I think there's like some cultural problems and maybe there's just not a government solution.
There's not a whole lot of a government solution. I mean, there's a few there. You know, supporting the family unit would be kind of that non-government solution. I believe, you know, you should be able to raise a family in a single income household, right? Going back to the government fix, get the costs down. You know, get it to where, you know, you can have a dad out there working, busting his butt while mom's at home with the kids, or vice versa. I don't care how that structure is for your family, but you should be able to raise a family on one income in America, but the costs have gotten so high because we keep printing money and keep buying our own debt. And this continual cycle keeps going that drives up inflation and makes it to where families can't do that. So in order to even survive and make your house payment and make food bills, you've got to have both parents working. Well, then you go and run into the cost of daycare. It's absurd right now. I know you've got young kids. I don't know if your kids are in daycare. We've had ours when I was in the military in Dothan. And there's really, it offset the cost of my wife working. So it's like, okay, well, we take that cost out. We bring her home. And it actually was better. Now, that doesn't help the families that just have to get out there and have two people working, but the government's not the solution there. We need to get churches active again in our communities, and they can help pick up the weight of that social safety net. That's how it was originally structured. The church was supposed to take this role and responsibility in the communities, but once we separated out of the church, out of our politics, they're not providing that support anymore.
Yeah, we've gotten more secular as a country, but even the church, and this is a complaint of mine regularly, is that a lot of times church steers clear of politics. They don't want to dabble in it. But then some of these things that the government is encouraging that are antithetical to these biblical values, this biblical worldview, they need to speak out against. And there's a real reluctance to from the clergy because they don't want to turn away parishioners they see as dabbling in politics as something akin to maybe like an idolatry or so. I don't know what it is, but the church is really like they're taking the separation of church and state and they're sitting it out.
Well, and this is going to make some people upset, and that's okay. It is idolatry. The church has chosen a tax-free paycheck instead of actually being involved in society. It goes back to 1954 when the Johnson Amendment got attached to the tax code. Essentially, what that did is made it illegal for a 501c3, i.e. a charitable organization like a church, to be active in politics. It was never meant to be like that. The government did that, and then the welfare state of the government grew, and church's involvement in society decreased. I mean, there is a marker in history when that started to happen in this country. It's 1954.
The world poverty and that everything in that era sort of led us to where we are today.
Absolutely. And this is one of the things I go back overall in the campaign. You know, you have people in this race that, you know, promise pet projects, promise money coming back to the district. I am sick and tired of the federal government expansion. I'm a true conservative, like really the only true conservative in this race from the stance of I do not want the federal government expanding anymore. We've seen what it's given us over the last 70 years. Having more federal money in our communities is not a good thing. It gives them more control over us, and it ultimately, you know, corrupts the balance that is, you know, your local everyday citizen and what the federal government's role is. But we don't talk about that as Republicans anymore because we spend money just as bad as the Democrats do.
Also, we got to leave it there. Folks want to find out more about you or your campaign. Where can they look?
Yeah, you can find us on all social media, Sidwell for Congress. You can also go to our website, sidwellforcongress.com. And I also put a plug in. We are not funded by, you know, the establishment, by a bunch of super PACs and PACs. We're funded by people in South Alabama. So if you can go on, if you want to vote for me, great. We need your vote on August 11th. We also need your donations. We survive on small dollar donations. So go to our website, sidwellforcongress.com, and donate if you can.
Awesome. We'll talk again before the big day, but thanks for hopping on this morning.
Absolutely, man. Anytime. Thank you.
Awesome. So, well, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Stayed up late again watching TV with my best friend. Laughing at the late night show. I don't know what's wrong with me, because I know I need my rest. But if I don't stay up all night, sleep all day, I ain't at my best. Hey, yes, we
welcome
are.
Welcome back to the Jeff Ford Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday morning. Joy Clark coming up in the next hour, so please stay tuned for that. 251-343-0106, that's the text line. Ricardo, I think this will be the new normal for Iran. The bright side is if we hit them back harder each time, there will be nothing left of Iran for a while. But somehow we hit them pretty hard. At least that's the way it's reported. I don't know how hard. It's hard to gauge. But they keep battling back. They keep figuring out a way to cause mischief, if you will. And all it takes is a little bit of mischief to upset the global financial standing. That's their leverage. Billy, just like the cloud rigged the soccer game, the war in Iran is going the same way. Everything he touches turns to poop. I don't think if he is rigging the soccer game, it didn't end well. But, I mean, like, what did you want your president, your head of state to do? Calling the head of FIFA and say, hey, I mean, this was clearly like an accidental thing that, I don't know, just the less I have to talk about soccer, the better. Unnamed texter, you people just keep kissing up to Trump. Will it all stop? Iran is winning. Iran is not winning. Iran is not winning, okay? They're doing things to cause hardship, but they are not winning. If you look at the scoreboard, it's a blowout right now. Squirrel Vereen. I went to Tallahassee in 2010, and I was happy to see it still had a Toys R Us in the old style. Anyway, the controversial former Mobile Airport Authority Executive Director Chris Curry was running Tallahassee's airport under Mayor Gillum. I remember that when that happened. Let's get a break here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Just as true as mine. Good night, angel. Sleep tight, darling. And close your pretty brown eyes.